All right, Debo, say good morning. Good morning. Yashakach to Ari for the delicious breakfast. Shkoyach. You must have been up all night baking. This is the secret learner kakosh recipe. So just babka, what is it? Babka. It's not kakosh. No, you're not Hungarian. You can't. Okay, all right. So let's say we are up to today's daf is Ayin Aleph. We're actually going to pick up. I know that you got to the top of Ayin Aleph. That's the word out on the street, that you got to the top of Ayin Aleph. So I'm going to pick up with the last two lines of Ayin Amud Beis. So for most of you, it'll just be Chazara. I apologize if you're going to be bored by it, but you'll bear with me. So last two lines, Ayin Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Hashta de Amrit. So remember, again, yesterday's daf, a little bit, not complicated, but just a little bit involved in terms of all the different drushas that we had to deal with. So the Gemara says, Hashta de Amrit Bo. The drushu dasa. Now that we said that the word bo, right? Remember again, this is talked about by Karim Pesach, is being used for a drusha called benechar lo yocha bo lamali. Why do I need the phrase of any benechar? And I will say, remember, interestingly enough, benechar we've discussed learns means what? Benechar means, we've often thought it means like a Gentile, a non-Jew. But the truth is, it's actually come out from a number of our sugyas that benechar actually means someone who does not necessarily believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That could be Jew, that could be non-Jew, but it could also be a Jew and a pastor. State and apikores. So ko benechar lo yocha bo lamali, to which the Gemara says, bo, top of ayin aleph, hamaras das poselas, vein hamaras das poselas b'maiser, to teach you that if a person is an apikores, Rashi says, hamaras das poselas, top Rashi, dimhimir dato vinis nachru ma'asov la'avu shabbat shamayim, that if a person will say, himir dato literally means what? Literally means like Tamura, if he exchanged his beliefs, i.e., he does not believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sabo hamaras das poselas, ve'ein hamaras das poselas b'maiser. So it is only again by Karban Pesach that if a person is an apikores, that precludes him from eating Karban Pesach, but yet, if a person is an apikores, it would not preclude him from eating maiser. So for example, again, it's self-explanatory. Kol orel yocha bo lamali. So why does the Torah have to say that any orel may not eat it? Why does that Torah have to tell me that? Bo eino ochel. See, the Gemara, again, what the Gemara's questioning is, it could have just said, kol orel lo yochal. And remember, again, that phrase of any person who's uncircumcised may not eat, that phrase is written in the context of Karban Pesach. So I understand that it's Karban Pesach. Why do you need the extra bo? Bo, the Gemara's understanding, is an exclusionary phrase. They tell you that an Arel can't eat this, but he can eat something else. What is it something else he can eat? Bo eino ochel, he can't eat Karban Pesach, aval ochel hu b'matzo u'b'morer. But what can he eat? He can eat matzah and maror. So far what we've established is that lemaisa, kol benechar lo yochaba teaches me that lemaisa, a benechar, an apikores can't eat Karban Pesach, but an apikores can eat maiser, and kol ora lo yochaba teaches us that our reilos is a problem. Being uncircumcised is a problem vis-a-vis the Karban Pesach, but ultimately would not preclude one from eating matzah and maror. V'itztrich, and we need both of these phrases, v'itztrich lemichtav orel, v'itztrich lemichtav kol benechar, and now it's important to exclude the orel, and it's important to exclude the benechar from Karban Pesach. We have to write both of these things. Why? Because of Rachamara Orel Mishum Demois. Because the Torah just said that an Orel, someone who's uncircumcised, would not be permitted to eat the Karban Pesach. I would have said Demois. We'll say Mois means what? It's disgusting, meaning there's a physical blemish in such an individual. But a benechar, as much as he might have repugnant ideologies, right, his body itself is not mois. So perhaps, again, only a physical disqualification would preclude him from eating Karban Pesach, but perhaps a spiritual disqualification or a theological disqualification would not. Therefore, it has to write both. Or had the Torah just excluded the benechar, the apikores, from Karban Pesach, I would say, look, he shouldn't eat Karban Pesach. You know why? Because his heart, remember, Karban Pesach is part of the bris, part of the covenant that we have with our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Bless you. This Ben Nechar, again, his heart is not L'shamayim, and therefore he shouldn't eat. But remember, we already spoke about, you could have a situation of an Orel who is a person who is not on the wrong side of the law. Remember, again, for example, the case of Mesu Achmav Machmas Mila. We spoke about this case of where, again, two or three, depending on the machlokes, previous brothers died as a result of Mila, as a hemophiliac family. He doesn't have a Mila. And I was saying, in such a situation, a person like that may be putter from Mila, but what? But what? But Lamaisa, again, he's still an Oral. He's still an Aral. At the end of the day, Aral is a physical state. If a person has Arla, they're an Aral, independent of the reasons. So I might have thought that, again, it's only the apikores who can't eat, but the Aral, whose lathe could be to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whose heart is the Shamayim, I would have thought, no, therefore Tzvicha, therefore Rabbi say we need both of these statements, that both an Aral as well as a Benechar may not eat of Karban Pesach. Mimenu, so we'll say the Pasuk the Gemara is quoting over here is, Atochlu mimenu na uvashel mevushal b'mayim, don't eat of it. It is the Karban Pesach. No, is raw, cooked. Kims the ish roshal kibah krafan. You have to eat it roasted. We saw some psachim. V'losasimen ad boker v'hanosar mimenu ad boker v'ish tisrofu. Don't leave anything over to the morning, and whatever is left over from it in the morning, you have to burn. So the Gemara says mimenu mimenu lamali. Why do I need two mimenus? And I will say again, if you look, so those of you who have the newer Gemaras, you have the pasuk quoted by the side, so it's a little bit easier to see. But you can see that word mimenu is really extraneous. I don't need that word mimenu. So why do I need two mimenus? What do I learn from that? L'chidderaba am Rabbi Yitzchok. So we'll say the Gemara answers, oh, that's going to be necessary for the drasha of Rabbi Bar Yitzchok, which we will learn later on. Rashi points out over here, l'kam Pirkin, so you're going to have to wait another 3 days. In Meretz Hashem, we will get to that drasha. Fine. Omer, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ino Tzarech. Rabbi Akiva says that the truth is we don't need a gzera shava to go ahead and learn out that an orel is aser b'truma. Remember, that was Rabbi Akiva on Amud Beis. We don't need a Gzera Shava to teach us that an Arel is Aser in Truma. Harihu Omer, because the Pasuk says, Ish Ish Lerabos Es Ha'arel. The Pasuk the Gemara is quoting over here is, Ish Ish Mizera Aaron, V'hut Sarua Ozav. If a Ish Ish, any man from the offspring of Aaron, if he has Saras or he's a Zav, Bakadosh Bakadoshim Al Yochal, until he can't eat from any of the kachim, until he becomes ritually pure, and so too. Fine. So the point the Gemara is making over here is, it says ish ish. Ish ish again is an extra phrase. Whenever you see an extra phrase, the Torah is coming to include something. So what does ish ish come to include? Ish ish the rabbi says ha'arel. Oh, so the extra ish comes to teach us that even someone who is uncircumcised is not permitted to take part of any of the Kohanic portions, be that kodshim or also truma. I ve'imal rabbi says ha'oni. Maybe ish ish is coming to include not the ara. Rabbi says, when we say coming to include, include in this case means to come to include him in the category of people who cannot eat Kohanic portions. So say that ish ish comes to include an owning. Rabbos, remember, an owning is someone in the period between the death of someone whom they're obligated to mourn for, between the period of death and burial. So perhaps ish ish comes to include that the owning may not eat truma or any other sacrificial items. Rabbi Chanina Amakra, v'chol zar. The pasuk says v'cholzar zoros amarti l'cha v'lo aninos. So we'll say the fact that the pasuk says cholzar cholzal lo yochal kodesh, that comes to include someone who ultimately is alien to the past, meaning someone who inherently is disqualified, and not speaking about someone who has some type of other external state, and therefore again that would come to exclude Harelos and not come to exclude Aninos. So the Gemara says, Ema v'lo Arelos. I said, why don't you just come to say that it excludes Arelos? Hoksiv ish ish. Well, no, because the Pasuk says ish ish, and ish ish comes to include an Arel that he is not permitted to eat of the Kohanic portions, and excludes ultimately an Onen. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. How do you know that? How do you know that ish to bosses? We have two possibilities. That ish ish can either come to include an owning or come to include an RL. So the Gemara is suggesting over here, no, it can't. It's not talking about an owning. It has to be talking about an RL. So the Gemara says, okay, how do you know that? Meaning, how do you know that ish ish comes to include an RL? Mistabra, arelis havlele rabuye. I'll tell you why that arelis would be included. Why? Shekein ma'asim krusim badavar ha'evad. Because we'll say this is a mnemonic for all of the aspects that apply to Arelos. What do they mean? Mechusar Ma'aser. Number one, an Arel is Mechusar Ma'aser. Excuse me. He is missing an action, i.e. the action of Mila. Ma'aser Begufo. And the particular action deals with something that's physically affecting. Va'anosh Kares. Non-compliance of Bris Mila carries the penalty of Kares. V'yesh Alif Ne'adiba. And I will say this is a very interesting statement. The mitzvah of Mila applied even before Matan Torah. Meaning it was a mitzvah that was in effect even before Matan Torah. Umilas zechara va'avadav ma'akeves, and the circumcision of the male members of his household and his servants prevent him from bringing the carbon pesach. So we'll say, when you see all of these stringencies by Arevos, it makes sense, therefore, if the Torah is coming to include an additional category of Kohen who is excluded from eating Truma and other Kachim, they would come to include an Arel over an Onen, because an Arel has many more stringencies than Aninos. Adraba, I could just say the opposite. Aninos havidei l'rabuye. I would say that we should include an Onen in the case where he can't bring a Karan Pesach. Shekin yeshna b'chol sha'a v'nohagas ba'anashim ba'anashim, because Aninos applies at all time, meaning it can technically apply at all times, and it applies in men and women equally. V'ein b'adol n'takin atzmo, and a person who's an Onen has no ability to rectify his own situation. So we'll say, if I'm an RL, I can rectify that. I can rectify that. If I'm an Onen, I cannot rectify that. To which the Gemara says, Hanach Nefishin. Still, there are more stringencies by Arelos than there is by Aninos. Rava Amar, Rava says, still, below Hanach Nefishin, Lamin Almasis Amris. So the, even if Arelos did not possess more stringencies than Aninos, I would still say that it is Arelos that is included in the Pasuk and not Aninos. Why? Amakra ish. Because the Pasuk says ish, ezehu davar, sheyeshno beish ve'eno beisha. What is something that applies to a man but does not apply to a woman? Havi omer ze Arelos. I would say to you, what is that? That only is Arelos. Because we'll say, if it refers to Aninos, Aninos applies to men and women equally. The fact that the Torah goes out of its way to say ish, and ish is a masculine term. Remember, again, there are other terms the Torah could use if it wants to be gender neutral, like Adam. But ish, by definition, usually means dafka, a man. Therefore, again, it must be coming to include Arelos. To teach me that if a Kohen is an Orel, he may not go ahead and partake of the Truma that is his right portion. I forgot to mention before, the shir this morning is dedicated by David Kahana in memory of Esther Malka Bas Alter Dan. I hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshama has an aliyah. For Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva, hi, Tosha B'Sachir, my Avidle. So what's it current to Rabbi Akiva? He's quoting over here the Pasuk again by Karman Pesach. The Pasuk says, Toshav V'Sachir Lo Yochal Bo. So what does Rabbi Akiva learn from this Pasuk? Amar Rav Shmaya. So what's it? Because remember, the assumption is that these are talking about a Ger Toshav. These are both non-Jews. If they're both non-Jews, then they're obviously excluded from Karan Pesach for a totally different reason, which is, in addition for the general Gentile exclusion, they're also uncircumcised. So Lamaisa, again, of course, not going to partake of the Karan Pesach. So Rabbi Kiva, what do we need that pasuk for? So Gemara says, Amar Shmaya la'asui aravi mahol v'givoni mahol. Oh, you know who it comes to include? An Arab, a circumcised Arab, or a circumcised Givoni. Now, I both say these individuals, so we know again that Bnei Yishmael do milah, and Givonim, Rashi says, is Shem Uma, Shemolat. So the Givonim were individuals also who circumcised themselves. So these were two nations of people who circumcised themselves. I might have thought that because they're circumcised, they could partake of the Karan Pesach. Therefore, again, the Gemara Rabbi Kiva says, no, it comes to exclude a circumcised Aravian Givoni. To which the Gemara says, 1 second, are you trying to tell me there's a Havamina that they would be considered to be circumcised for Jewish purposes, for Karan Pesach purposes? Vahot, now we learn, but it's actually an interesting case. Konem sha'aninen la'arelim. So what happens if I say, I will not get any benefit from those who are uncircumcised, from Arelim? So the Gemara says, Mutter ba'areli Yisrael, va'asr mu'le of the kochavim. I am permitted to get benefit from uncircumcised Jews, and usher to get benefit from what? From what? From circumcised Gentiles. Or in other words, they're both saying, when I go ahead and I make a statement that I can't get benefit from uncircumcised individuals, remember, by Nedarim in general, we go Acher Lashon Bnei Adam. We go after what we call just the way people speak. When the people refer to uncircumcised ones, who are they referring to? Non-Jews. Non-Jews. So if I make a neder, I konam. Konam, we'll get it when we get into Shavuos. And then we'll see there's a neder and a konam. We know it because we say this in Hataras Nedarim, right? A neder, konam. So we'll see. These are all different vehicles of making promises or making vows. So when I go ahead and I make a vow or I make a konam vow, that I will not get any benefits from my regalim. I'm permitted to get benefit from uncircumcised Jews, but I'm not permitted to get benefit from circumcised non-Jews. So what do you see from this? You see from, on the other hand, konam shani nana lemolin. If I go ahead and I make a neder, I'm not going to get any benefit from anyone who's circumcised. Mutar b'moli of the Chacham, I can still get benefit from circumcised Gentiles. Va'asra b'Erli Yisrael, but I'm not permitted to get benefit from even from uncircumcised Jews. So you see from here that what? L'maisa, that even a Jew who's a non-Jew who's circumcised is still considered to be what? An Arel. So I would even have a Havamina that a circumcised Arab or a circumcised Givoni would go ahead and be included. It absolutely has to do with it. It does, because again, what the Gemara is suggesting is the way that people talk is based on halachic norms. Even a circumcised Gentile is still considered to be an Arel. That's the assumption the Gemara is making. Correct. That the way people talk is based on halachic categorizations of people. So the Gemara says, Ella. You're right. So rather, again, let's reject that. Therefore, again, Toshav Asachir is not coming to exclude a circumcised Gentile, because Lamai says such a person is no Havamina that they should be permitted to go and eat Karim Pesach. Rather, who does it come to include? It's actually an interesting case. El Asuye Ger Shemal Velo Taval. We'll say, now this is an interesting case about a ger, a convert, who did Mila, but did not yet do Tvila. So we'll say this case over here, Ger Shemal Velo Taval. So we'll say, therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, he would still be considered to be a Toshav Fesachir, and therefore would be excluded from Karban Pesach, even though he has begun the conversion process until he does Tevila and a Mikvah. Even though he's done Mila already, he is not yet a full-fledged Jew, therefore cannot partake in Karban Pesach. Similarly, Vekatesh Nolad Kumal, and it would also come to exclude a child who was born but was not circumcised. Let me say it differently. Katan Shinolat Kishumal, a child who was born circumcised. Let's say, a child who was born without an arla, child was born without the foreskin. The kasavar tzarach lahatif mimeno dambris, because he holds that what? The Rabbi says, if a child was born circumcised, you still have to what? You still have to do hatafas dambris. You still have to draw blood from the makom mila. Rabbi Eliezer Tamei Da'amar Ger Shema Velo Tavar V'Taval Ger Ma'al Yehu. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer goes according to his reasoning, because he holds that a ger that had Mila but not yet Tevila is a full ger. Furthermore, he holds V'Kasavar Katan Shenolad Kishenolad Mo'l Eintzach Lahatif Mimeno Dambris. And again, so this is a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer will hold that a ger who had Mila but not Tevila is a full-fledged Jew, and a Katan who's born already circumcised, you don't have to do anything else. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, says, no, that's not the correct case. Ger Shemal Velo Taval is not yet a Jew, and a Katan who was born without a foreskin still requires a Tavas Dambris. And therefore, again, the Pasuk of Toshav Fesachir, according to Rabbi Akiva, comes to exclude both of these cases. Now, both say, Halacha, La Halacha, we paskin, like Rabbi Akiva, we paskin that a Ger Shemal Velo Taval, if a convert did Mila but did not yet do Tevila, so we paskin such a person is not yet Jewish. Remember, I mentioned this to you in the Sigis of conversion, because it's interesting, Halachic Shaila, what if a Ger dies? What if somebody dies in the process of conversion before Tevila? There's a big Halachic Shaila as to where you bury them. Are you permitted to bury them in a Jewish cemetery? Or do we say, no, you know, we appreciate the fact that you initiated this process, but you're not yet Jewish. And we paskin that if a child is born mahol, if indeed a child is born without a foreskin, we still require hatafas dambris. We still require, again, some drawing of blood for the sake of circumcision. Pasuk Rabbi Akiva on both of those accounts. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer, hi ish ish my avdi, Rabbi Eliezer, what do you do with the ish ish? What do you need the ish ish for? Dibra Torah Kalosha B'nei Adam. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't understand what you guys are getting all excited about. The Torah very often just speaks in the way that people speak. So not the way you and I speak, but the way biblically people spoke is to say the phrase ish ish, any man. That was a common way. So therefore, Torah speaks Kalosha B'nei Adam. You don't have to dashen it. Okay. Boy Rav Chama Bar Ukva. Katan Arel Mao Lasocha B'Shem Shoshuman. That was another very interesting Shaila. Can you go ahead? Let's say you have a katan aral. Now, what does a katan aral mean? This means a child within the first 8 days of his life. Child, so again, let's explain the shayla. So let's say again, I am a kohen, and I have a baby, mazel tov, and I want to smear truma oil on my baby. Why would they smear truma? So again, smearing with oil, anointing with oil was a big thing. It was done perhaps a little bit early to go ahead and soften skin. But for babies, it was often done to go ahead and keep body temperature up. So let's say I want to go ahead and I want to smear my baby with truma oil. Here's the issue. My baby's within 8 days. So here's the shayla. The shayla is my baby called an orel or not. If my baby is called an RL, then what? Then what? Then we've established already that an RL is not permitted to get benefits from Truma. If, however, again, what's the counter argument? The counter argument is my baby is only called an RL when? From 8 days and on, but within 8 days, there's no mitzvah of milah. V'haraya, let's say I decided, you know what, the mall's available, the bagels are on sale, you know, it's day number six. Let me chaper rain over here, let me make the milah on day number six. What's the halacha? What's the halacha? Not just on Nebuch, poor baby, he's got to have a tafas dan bris again on the eighth day. Even though I removed the arla, he's got to have a tafas dan bris. So the shaila really is, what is the status of a baby within the first 8 days? Is the baby pre-day eight considered to be an RL? Or do we say no? RL is only a state after what? After you have an obligation of milah. But if there's an obligation of milah, you're nothing. I mean, I don't mean that like halachically, you're not in the state of arelos. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara Malzach Shem 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 Shuma. Arelos Shelo Bizmana Ma'akva. Do we say Arelos Shelo Bizmana Ma'akva? In other words, do we say that before the Zman of the Mila, the child is an RL? Or do we say Olo Ma'akva? Or do we say no, that before day number eight, the child's not even called an RL? Amar Reb Zira Tashma. So let's listen to this. Reb Zira says, well, let's analyze this. He says, Einli Ela Milas Zechara Bishas Asiya. So we'll say, based on the psukim by Karban Pesach, here's what I know. The Torah tells me that the male members of my home cannot be arelim at the time that I go ahead and I actually perform the Karban Pesach. That's called asiyah. So at the time that I offer up the Karban Pesach, the male members of my home must be circumcised. The Torah also tells me, va'avadav b'shas achila, that at the time that I eat the Pesach, my slaves must be circumcised as well. Minayin litain, es ha'omer shel zeh bazeh, ve'es ha'omer shel zeh bazeh. How do I know to apply this one to that one, and that one to this? Meaning, how do I know that in order for me to offer the Karban Pesach, it's not just the male members of my household, but my slaves must also be circumcised? And how do I know that at the time when I'm going to eat, it's not just that for my slaves to be circumcised, but what? The male members of my household have to be circumcised as well. Talmud Lomar, az l'gzeru shava. To which the Gemara says, we make a gzeru shava of az. It says the word oz, v'chi agor yitcha ger, v'asa pesach l'Hashem, himol lo kol zohar, v'az yikrav la'asoso. And it says again by the pasuk, v'cho evet ish miknas kesef umal ta'o, so oz yochal bo. So oz comes to link the experiences of offering the Pesach and eating the Pesach, to tell me that whatever applies by eating applies by offering, whatever applies by offering applies by eating. So just like, again, By offering, the male members of my household must be circumcised. So too, by eating, they must be circumcised. Just like by eating, it says that my avadim have to be circumcised, so too, by the offering, they have to be circumcised as well. Bishlama avadim mishkachas lo. So we'll say, now I understand why I could have a situation of where my avadim are present b'shas achila, but weren't present at shas asiyah, weren't present at the time that I offered it. How so? Kego dizabninhu beni. So I could have a situation of, meaning, what we're asking like this, the Torah Dafka says that avadim have to be circumcised at the time when I am eating the Karban Pesach. So I understand that I could have a situation where the avadim were not present at the time that I offered the Karban, but were present at the time that I'm eating the Karban. How can you have a situation like that? Very simple, right? I bought them, right? Again, I offered my Karban Pesach. There was a sale on Avadim. I bought the Karban Pesach right after. I bought the Eved right after Karban Pesach. So I didn't have him at the time of the Akrava, but I have him at the time of the Achila. So now the Torah tells me that even though he was not yours at the time of the Akrava, at the time of the offering, he has to be circumcised in order to be able to eat of the Karban Pesach. Ela zecharav dis nu b'shas Achila, v'les nu b'shas Asiyah hechi mishkach. So Rabbi say, where can you ever have a situation where I don't have a child at the time of the Hakrava, but I do have a child when? But I do have a child when? At the time of the eating. The Gemara says, Lav di isyalut ben asiyah l'achila. Oh, what's the case? The case must be where my wife gave birth between the offering of the Karban Pesach and what?
And the eating.
Now, what does that tell you? Now, remember, again, that baby is a newborn. It's not yet the eighth day. And yet, what does the Torah say? That all the male members of my household have to be circumcised in order for me to eat Karban Pesach. What do I see from that? Shmamino, arelos shelo bezmano, havi arelos. I will say, what I see from there is that my newborn baby is what? considered to be an Arel, even though it's within the 8 days of the Milah. So from here I see, the Gemara is trying to bring a Raya, that from here I see that Lamaisa, again, a child, even within the 8 days, is considered to be an Arel. Now, Bosai, remember, let's not lose sight of our question. What was our question? Can I go ahead and use Truma oil and smear it on my baby who is less than 8 days old? Is that called giving Truma to an Arel or not? It would appear to be based on this that what? The answer would be yes. That would be called giving Truma to an Arel, and therefore it would be Asr. Amar Rava, so Rava said like this. Let's analyze this. Amar Rava, v'tizbira, himo lo kol zachar amar achmana, v'az yikrav la'asoso. So let's analyze this. The pasuk says, you shall circumcise every male member of your household, v'az yikrav la'asoso. Then you could offer up the Karan Pesach. V'hai lav bar mi'alohu. So how can you say, so we'll say, now what the Gemara is suggesting over here is an impossible suggestion. Are you telling me now that if my wife has a baby on Erev Pesach, that I can't eat the Karan Pesach because my son is an Arel? Right? The Gemara says, doesn't make any sense. The pasuk itself says that you have to circumcise all of those who are subject to circumcision. If this baby is not subject to circumcision, how can you tell me then that he's going to preclude me from eating the Karan because he's an Arel? Ella, hachamayas, given what's the case? Kigon shechaltsasa chama. We'll say, what's the case? The case over here is where the baby came down with a fever. So the Gemara says, Rashi says, so what happened? He had fever, and now the fever broke. And I will say, the halacha is, this is the Gemara's halacha, you have to give a baby 7 days to recover from a fever. So you can't do Mila within 7 days after the baby recovered. Damar Shmuel, chatzasa chama, nostin lo kol shiva. If the baby has, once the fever breaks, you have to give him 7 days. Diavina le kol shiva. So we'll say, so what happened over here? You have to give him the full 7 days. Vinimali bizarre. So we'll say, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the seventh day fell out on Erev Pesach. So now at this point in time, we'll call the baby is 15 days old, right? So I was ready to do the Mila. Baby got a fever. I had to stop the fever. He gets 7 days. The seventh day falls out on Erev Pesach. So the Gemara says, V'nimale misafra. Why don't you give him the Bris Mila in the morning of the seventh? To which the Gemara says, Ba'inon me'es le'es. No, because again, for a fever, if you don't just need 7 calendrical days. What do you need? You need 7 full days. Ay, v'hatani luda, but luda taught, yom havra asak yom hivaldo, that the day of his healing, meaning the seventh day for the fever, is just like the day in which he was born. My yom hivaldo lo ba'ina me'is le'is. At yom havra aso lo ba'ina me'is le'is. To which the Gemara says, well, doesn't that mean that it's supposed to be the same day, the same way, that for counting the first 8 days of the baby's life, I don't need 8 full days. I don't need 8 full days, but rather what? As long as whatever amount of day number one was left over, that's enough to go ahead and make that day one. So too for the healing of the baby, I don't need 7 complete days, but rather what? I just need to get onto the seventh day, and at that point in time, I could do the Mila. To which he wants to say, lo, Adif yom hivra also miyom hivaldo. No, not true. The day of the healing of the baby is stronger than the day of his birth. The ilu yom hivaldo lo ba'ina me'is le'is. The ilu yom havra also ba'inon me'is le'is. Because they both say, in this situation, lemaisa, again, what? On the day of the healing, you require a full 24-hour period. But on the day that which he's born, then what? Then lemaisa, you do not need a full 24-hour period. So the point that I was making over here is if in your case, day number 7 falls out on Erev Pesach, then what is that halacha? You can't give him a Mila on that day because you need to give him that full day to recover. So because you can't give him a Mila that day, it can't be that what? That he's going to be called an Orel that would prevent ultimately, again, his father from partaking of the Karban Pesach. Rapapa Amar Kigon, the Ka'ivle Eini Liyinuga, the Itbach Beini Ubeini. So a papa comes along and says, what's the case? The child's eyes hurt. He had an eye condition. Rashi says, So I'll say, what's the case over here? Where can you have a case where my child was an Orel at the time of the giving of the Karban Pesach, but yet I still have an obligation to give him a Bris Mila before we sit down to eat the Karban Pesach? Something was wrong with the child's eyes. Child had for lack of an eye ache. It's not a nondescript term. I'm sorry? Nothing. Let's say, come on. Eye ache. Is that not a good term? Eye ache?
For a doctor.
Yeah, I consider a doctor. An eye ache. Eye pain. I'm sorry. Professor Edelman didn't like my eye ache. All right. Eye pain, eye ache. So what happened? So Mosa, in this case over here, now the reason why this is a good case is because here's a situation where I can't give the Mila while the child has the eye ache. But as soon as the eye ache goes away, I can give the Mila. So in this case over here, in the morning when I was going to offer the Karan Pesach, I couldn't give a Mila. Now the eye ache went away. Now I could give the Mila. So that's a case ultimately, again, where if I were to not give him the Mila, then what? Then he would really be considered to be an Aral and would preclude me from eating Karan Pesach. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Rava says, Kigon Shahayu Ave V'Imo Chavushim Beis Asurin. Another case where this could happen is, let's say the parents were incarcerated. Let's say the parents were in jail. Rashi says, "Bishas asiya u'mitzvas mila mutelas aleihem velo alachirin v'hein einam yichon laasos es pischan v'shachat shluchan aleihem v'ashmuin and krashim yatzu bishas achila milas b'ramak vasa." So let's listen to this case. So mother and father are in jail. So remember, again, they appointed shluchim to go and offer their Karan Pesach on their behalf. But Mila is something that's a responsibility on the parents. So if they got out after the Karan Pesach was already offered, they would have an obligation to what? To go in and give their child the bris Mila prior to sitting down and eating the Karan Pesach. So we're just trying to come up with cases where you could have a situation where essentially, the Karan Pesach, at the time the Karan Pesach was offered, the Arelos was not a problem, but the Arelos must be rectified prior to the sitting down and eating of the Karan Pesach. Rav Kana Breid, Rav Nechemiah Amar, Rav Kana Breid, Rav Nechemiah had another suggestion. Kegon tumtum shenikra v'nimtza zachar. What's the case? The case is where the baby was a tumtum. Also remember, tumtum is the case of where there's a membrane that covers over the male or female organ, so you can't actually tell the gender of the child. So let's say, again, at the time of the offering of the Karan Pesach, the child was a tumtum, then that membrane was opened up after the offering of the Karan Pesach, and it's revealed that what? The child is a zachar, which means now you have to give that baby a mila before you sit down to eat the Karban Pesach. Otherwise, he's an oral and he will preclude the parents from eating Karban Pesach. This is a wild case. Kigon shahotzi rosho chutz leprusdar. What's the case? The case is where the baby's head came out of the mother. Rashi says over here, kigon shahotzi vlad rosho chutz leprusdar ukvar avru shiva yomim. And I will say, what happens? She gave birth, the forehead came out, and she's been like that for 7 days. Yeah. Umeahi shaita, havi le vlad dikaima. And I will say, this is actually interesting halacha. A baby is considered to be born for halachic purposes once the forehead emerges. That baby is born. Now, this is very important because, remember, I had this shaila this past week. A woman, mamish, gave birth literally at shkia, literally at sunset, and the shaila was, what was the day of the bris? Now, interestingly enough, when they record the time of the birth in the hospital, so they record that based on what? When the baby fully exits. So remember again, which means that bepashtos, it was yotzo padachto, the forehead of the baby came out. It was a very quick delivery. So mamish, very quick for me, right? So it's an easy labor. Mamish, no problem, right? So what happens? So if the baby came out, if the baby was recorded as coming out at 4:43, which was mamish punk shkia, which means that what? That even if it was a quick labor, at least a minute before, the padachas was out, which means the baby was born during the day. So in this case over here, I'll say, if you have a situation like this, so this is an interesting situation where what? Where Lemaisa, again, the baby was born, meaning so the baby forehead came out, it's been like that for 7 days, so which means that baby is effectively born, which means comes day number eight, there is an obligation for Mila. Right, and I will say, obviously, again, we will discuss this case is an impossibility for many different reasons. The Gemara itself is going to discuss, but Lamaisa, again, the Gemara is trying to come up where you could have technically a situation like this. Rashi says, "Kvar avru shiva yamei shaita havili vlad." From the moment that the forehead emerges, the baby is considered to be born. The kaimel m'seches nido yatsa rosho hari hu kielot v'hashta ben asiyah la'achila yatsa guf tahavilei zman mila. Because the Rebbe says, see, now what happened? So let's go back to the Gemara. So when Kigon Shalti, Rubo Chutz Leprusdar, and this situation again, and let's say in this situation, the baby was like that for 7 days, which means again, comes day number eight, where the Maisa, what is time for the Mila? Now, obviously, and then let's say they do the Karban Pesach, husband leaves for a few minutes. Listen, I'm not going anywhere, I've been like this for 7 days. I might as well go do the Karban Pesach. He comes back, afterwards the baby's born. When would be the obligation to give this baby a Bris Mila? That day. So here's a situation where at the time of the offering of the Mila, so again, at the time of the offering of the Mila, so you couldn't give a bris, but now the baby was born, you have to give a bris. Mara said, 1 second, let me chai. Can such a child like that survive for 7 days like that? Vatanya. Kevan sheyatze la'avir ha'olam. Niftach ha'soso v'nistam ha'pasuach. Shil Molek came and Yachalach Yosak Lashachas. So we'll say, the Gemara uses a very nondescript term, but again, essentially sums up, which is when a baby's born, when the birth process begins, that which was open closes up, that which closes up, that which was closed now opens up. In other words, that obviously, when the baby begins to exit, so the baby while in utero was being supported by the mother. Obviously, all the systems have to switch over now to baby being self-sustaining when he comes out. So how could a baby possibly survive in that type of situation? To which the Gemara is actually very interesting. Hakamai askinan kegon shezanse ishta. This is where the baby was supported by the fever of the mother. The Gemara says, interestingly enough over here, that the mother was running a fever, and apparently, again, the fever diminishes the appetite, the fever diminishes the physical needs, and therefore, because the mother was ill, the baby also became ill, and therefore the baby had suppressed needs, or actually diminished needs. And because that, the baby was able to survive. Again, Abba say, we know this today to be an absolute impossibility. But again, this is what Chazal felt, interestingly enough, that a fever could sustain a person. Because since when a person has a fever, they have a diminished appetite, they could subsist on less for a longer period of time. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ishta. The man, whose fever, I jumped out a little bit. Whose fever are we talking about? Ilema ishta didei. If you want to say it's the fever of the baby, iyachi kol shiva boy. Rather, what's the case over here? The case where is the fever of the mother, and the fever of the mother somehow sustained the child. Or the other possibility is, hani mili, this idea that the child can't live, hecha delo ma'avi. So we'll say, look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Ma'ave tsoik, kegon avi avi. So again, when do we say that the child can't survive like that? That's only if the child didn't cry. In other words, the Gemara is saying, if the child cried, which indicates that what? The child is breathing, then the Ma'ase said the child could survive like that. If the child doesn't cry, the child's not breathing, the child can't survive like that. Okay. Again, all of these situations were just examples. The Gemara was just trying to give a case to illustrate a basic idea, which was what? That technically speaking, you could have a situation where the child was not an Orel at the time of the offering, but then became an Orel at what? At the time of the eating. And therefore, to tell us that the Orel status of the child must be rectified before you sit down to eat. But halacha l'maaseh, what comes down to is, again, so we'll say, but again, for our purposes, let's go back for just a moment. For our purposes, remember again, we came up with the Truma case. Let me just find the Lashon over there again. Rabbi Akya, where was it? Korim Sheninen. Ah, thank you. So we'll say, so again, Lamaisa, what it comes out to over here is that for our purposes, for our sugya, we paskin that a child within 8 days is not considered to be an RL. A child within 8 days is not considered to be an RL, and therefore, again, because you could only get the status of an RL when? When you have an obligation for Mila. But if there's no obligation for Mila, then Lamaisa Yara. Well, say now this, remember, don't confuse this with the case of the hemophiliac. Because the hemophiliac, even though he can't have a Mila, is still considered to be an Aral. But this baby within 8 days, he's not in the parish of Mila, therefore he's not Aral. Therefore, again, technically speaking, you'd be permitted to go ahead and shmir him with the Truma oil. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Amrab Yochanan, Shrine Binoi, Aral, Mekabel Hazah. An RL is permitted to be sprinkled. Now what he's talking about over here, Hazah, if you look at Rashi, RL, Yisal Shinitma Bemes, Mekaval Hazah, Litarmi Tumaso, Ukishiyimal Inozarach Lachzor Ulahazos, Vaocha Bekachim, Valarminar As Hazos Arilos Loshmazar. I'm also, it's interesting, Halacha. Let's say you have an RL who had become Tamemes. right, became ritually impure through contact with a corpse. How do you become tahor from contact with a corpse? How do you become tahor? Sprinkling of the paraduma. So even if someone is in arel, you could still sprinkle them with the ashes of the paraduma and purify them from their tuma. And we don't say that once they would then go ahead and have a mila, that what? That they'd be obligated to become purified again. So in other words, so the idea is, even though you're an RL, Phil, you know what? Maybe put it in the shul for the 9 o'clock minion. Oh, they have one. Oh, thank you. Perfect. Thank you very much. So what happens? So again, an RL, you could go ahead and you could sprinkle the ashes of Paraduma on an RL. Now, where do we know that from? Where do we say this from? Because, again, our forefathers were Arelim, and yet what? And we'll discuss where this is in just a moment. And yet they were still sprinkled with the ashes of Paraduma. Where do we know that from? Shinemar. What's the quoting over here from the Pasuk in Yoshua? The people came up from the Jordan River on the 10th of Nisan. On the 10th of Nisan. The Rabbi said, now what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk speaks about that Yoshua sprinkled them with, Ba'asara lo mehili mishum chulsha d'orcha. Now remember again, Rabbi said, during the years in the desert, we did not perform bris milah. Why did I perform bris milah? Because bris milah is dangerous if you don't know, if you're not going to be able to camp out and to stay in one place. And remember, in the desert, we never knew what was going to happen. So there was no milah that was done in the desert. So now Jewish people arrive in Eretz Yisrael on the 10th of Nisan. Now we know on the 10th of Nisan, they were not circumcised. Why do we know that? Mishum chusha d'archa. So chusha d'archa means, in general, travel is exerting, travel is tiring, and therefore to do a bris milah right when you stop traveling, that's sakana. So we know they had to wait. So now remember, hazah emas avid lehu. So when did they do the sprinkling of the ashes of the paraduma? Because remember, they're going to do a Karban Pesach. So when did they do the sprinkling? Lav kishen arelim. So I will say, the assumption is, when did sprinkling take place? Sprinkling must have taken place a little bit earlier. Because remember, again, the purification process with paraduma is how long? 7 days. So meaning for them to be able to do Karban Pesach, it must have been done earlier. And if it was done earlier, then what? Then they were definitely, what Rabbi said, they were arelim. So from here you see that you can go ahead and you can do... Look at Rashi. He says, He says, Hazah emas avid lehu. When did they do Hazah? It must have been what? Kishahin arelim. It must have been when they were arelim. V'dilma lo avid pesach klal. Well, maybe I don't understand. You see, you're only saying that because you're assuming that they must have done a Hazah because they were going to offer a Karban Pesach. Maybe they didn't offer a Karban Pesach at all. To which the Gemara says, lo, sakadetcho dichsiv vayyasu asa pesach. Well, that kind of blows that idea out of the water, because the Gemara says that what? The Pasuk says in Yoshua that they did the Karban Pesach. So obviously they did a Karban Pesach. Maskif la marzutra. V'dilma Pesach haba b'tumah haya. Oh, well, maybe they didn't do a sprinkling at all. Maybe Rabbi said this is a situation of what? Remember again, there's a concept of tumah hutra b'tzibur, which means that if the majority of the population are tmeim, then the laws of tumah are suspended. So maybe over here they did a Pesach in a state of tumah, in which case, again, there was no sprinkling at all for the sake. There was no sprinkling at all in a state of arelus.
Just assume that those that were eligible to do it did it, those who weren't. Not everybody was
arelus. Yes, they were. No, they didn't do Mila.
No, I'm saying the older people that are...
They died. Chet Meraglim. Right? So really, again, the assumption over here is pretty much everyone is dead. Everyone is dead. Or I should say, everyone is Arelim. Maybe Yoshua is the exception to this. I should take it back. It's Yoshua and Kalev and a couple of other sprinkling of individuals. But otherwise, the overall majority are Arelim. Maybe it was just a Pesach that was brought in a state of ritual impurity, to which the Gemara says, Amalei Ravashi, Tanya Behedja, we have a brisa that he taught us explicitly, Malu v'tavlu v'asu pisrein b'tara. Okay, so let's get our facts straight. The brisa tells us explicitly what happened. When they got to Eretz Yisrael, here's the order. They did Mila, they did Tevila, and they did their Pesach in a state of Tara. Rabbi Yossi tells us that, again, they did ashes of Paraduma, they were sprinkled for ritual impurity, they did Mila, they toveled in the mikvah. So I will say, so remember, the only way that this works is what? Is if you assume that at least the first sprinkling with the ashes of the paraduma took place when? When? While there was still Arelim. While they are still Arelim. Amarav, So that's the end of that conversation. So stop. So now, essentially, we have effectively proven that what? That even if you are an Orel, you can be sprinkled with the ashes of the Paraduma to rectify your Tumas. So see, the Havamina was, I might have thought that like Arelos is like a halachic bubble that prevents any other process from being effective on you. Kamash Malon, no, that if you are an Orel, you have one problem, but that does not preclude you from rectifying other issues, i.e. you can be sprinkled to take away ritual purity. Impurity, excuse me. Well, it's another interesting halacha. Amrav Rav Yisrael, Amrav. Lo nitna priya smila Avram Avinu. Shinez, right? People say, now again, just you should understand, by mila in general, there's prima and there's priya. So prima means the general removal of the foreskin. Now the way, if you ever look at a mila, so there are two parts. There's the foreskin, and then there's an additional membrane underneath the foreskin. So the foreskin actually has to really be cut. The membrane actually can actually be split apart. Can actually be split apart. So often you could do both of these steps in one, but it's two parts. It says the removal of the foreskin, the peeling back of the membrane. The Gemara is suggesting over here that Rabbi Rav Yitzchak suggests that Priya was never given to Avram Avinu. That all Avram Avinu had to do was to remove the actual foreskin, but was not obligated to remove the membrane. Shenemar, Ba'isahi Amar Hashem El Yoshua, God said to Yoshua, Asilucha Charvos Tsurim, make for yourself sharpened stones. Make for yourself, that's how they did Mila, right? Sharpened stones. The rest of the pasuk is, Vishuv mol es b'nei Yisrael shenis. And go ahead and circumcise Jewish people a second time. So the Gemara says, Vidilma hanach delo mol. Now maybe God is commanding Yoshua to circumcise those who had not yet done a circumcision, right? Meaning, again, the Gemara's assumption is that to circumcise them a second time means what? Don't just remove the foreskin, but what? Also remove the membrane. Maybe not. Maybe it's talking about the membrane. Maybe it's talking about people who do not yet have a mila. The Gemara says, "Dechsev kimulim hayu kala am hayotzim v'chala am hayilodim v'chala am hayilodim b'derech b'midbar b'derech b'tesim misayim lo malu." Because again, remember, the Gemara is suggesting perhaps there were still a couple left, because also remember, again, going back to Akiva's point before, so remember, they weren't all dead. There were people who were circumcised. Who was circumcised? Anyone who was below the age of 20 who left Mitzrayim, those people were still alive, and those people did have bris milah. So remember, anyone who was below the age of 20 and left Egypt had a milah, but anyone who was born in the desert did not have a milah. So maybe God is just commanding Yoshua about those who were born in the desert to go ahead and circumcise them. Im kain, my shuv. So what's that? Tell you why it doesn't make sense. Because God says to Yoshua to what? Vishuv mol es b'nei Yisrael shenis. Go and circumcise them again. Who's the again? There are two groups of people. There are people who have a bris milah, i.e. those who are born in Egypt, and those who don't have a bris milah, those born where? In the desert. So what do you mean circumcise them again? Rather, says the Gemara, Elo lav lepriya. Rather, what God is telling Yeshua is, listen, everybody's got to have a milah. There are some people that need a complete milah, but there are some people who only just need the removal of the membrane, but everyone needs something. Umay shenis, what does shenis teach us? El lav lepriya. Rather, we're talking about to the priya. We'll say priya is called the removal of the membrane. Umay shenis, why does it say a second time? La kushe sof mila trilas mila. To equate, Rabosai, the second part of mila to the first part of mila. Remember, the second part of mila is the removal of the membrane. The first part of mila is what? The removal of the actual foreskin. Matrilas mila ma'akeves, just like the first part of the mila is ma'akev, i.e., you require it. You have to have the removal of the foreskin. Af sof mila ma'akvinbo. So to Rabosai, what? The second stage of the mila, i.e., the removal of the membrane, is also ma'akev. If you don't do it, then what? You're still called an Orel. This nan we learned. Elohein tzitzin hama'akvin es ha-mila. Rabosei, these are the tzitzin, Rabosei, means like the pieces of flesh that could go ahead and invalidate the mila. What are they? Basar ha-chofes rov ha-atara. This is the skin that could go ahead and remove the rov of the atara. Rabosei, the atara is considered to be the wider part of the tip of the makom mila. So if you go ahead and there's pieces of skin, Rabosei, what are those pieces of skin that are left? Those are pieces of the membrane. If pieces of the membrane are left again on the makom mila, that is ma'akiv, and that will go ahead and invalidate the mila. Ve'ein ochel b'truma. And ultimately, again, these last pieces, these last little shreds, would preclude someone from going ahead and eating truma. Again, if they're from a Kohanic family. So we'll say, what do we see from here? We see Amar Avinu Vitem Rav Yirmiyah Barab Amarav This refers ultimately again to pieces of flesh that would go ahead and surround again the widest part of the atara, which is the tip of the makom mila. So Rabbah say, what do you see from here? So again, what comes out from here is something very interesting, which is that the original mitzvah of mila, as Avraham Avinu had it, only required the removal of the foreskin, but not the removal of the membrane. The chiddush in the mitzvah of mila when it came to Eretz Yisrael is that you had to remove the foreskin as well as the membrane. You needed both prima as well as priya, which is fascinating because now what it tells us historically, when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, everyone had a mila, but there were some who had a complete mila, i.e. prima and priya, removal of the foreskin and the membrane. Those were who? Those were who? People who were born in the desert. But even those who were born in Mitzrayim, because remember, those who were born in Mitzrayim had a milah because everybody recorded a milah prior to partaking of the Karban Pesach in Mitzrayim. Even those who had a milah in Mitzrayim, because they only had the removal of the foreskin, also required what? A secondary milah to go ahead and remove the membrane. All right, so we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with Bamidbar tomorrow.
If it was dangerous, it wasn't dangerous for them to be involved in the giving birth.